Hi, everybody. It's Jim Beekai, and the podcast is called Be You, The World Will Adjust. I apologize in advance for my voice. I'm a little stuffed up. I am clear with my vaccines, and I had a COVID test. I'm also back in Canada. It's nice to be back home to my country. Came back yesterday with my son, Jack, and we're following all the guidelines and the rules. I just wanted to talk, first of all, we're going to have a couple of interesting guests in the next couple of weeks join the show. So I think you should let anybody you think might be interested in both topics know so that they can hear them. Next week, we're going to have Stephen Harrington. Stephen's a really interesting guy, and I met him through Katie, my producer. He is the director at Deloitte, and he leads a workforce strategy and future work advisory. You sort of say, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, he talks about what skills will be required in the future. And it's going to be fascinating because guys like Stephen are out there trying to figure out with no roadmap. I mean, think about having 15 years ago or 25 years ago, thinking about the skills that are required for now. And you had no idea there was no Bitcoin. There was no AI. Well, maybe there was, but not to the same extent. So these people I find really fascinating and really interesting. They're doing pioneer work in a different way. And it sort of all trickles down. And one of the things I'll be interested in is how does his work then relate into the education system? Because in many cases, I remember meeting someone who did that work, thinking about courses for the future. How do you think about courses for a future where you have no context or backdrop to think about? And you know, how to make a buggy whip or how to make a buggy is different than making a car and everything else. But at a point in time, someone had to figure out those skills. What's interesting, he's been writing about the future of work since 2011. So that'll be Monday the 19th. And the week after that, I have my very dear friend and one of my most favorite people, Sandeep Sahota. Sandeep is the chief data officer, or data, however you prefer to say it, because some people say when I say data, they say it's data. You say tomato, I say tomato. And he's the chief data officer at the Bank of Montreal. And I've known Sandeep for quite a period of time. I first met him when he was at CPP, Canada Pension Plan Investment Bank, and he was in charge of data there. Subsequent to that, he went to BNY Mellon, and Bank of Montreal and I were fortunate enough to lure him back last fall to the Bank of Montreal. You know, data is such a big buzzword. Everybody talks about it. You read about it. You hear about it. But I thought I'd have Sandeep on the show and try to contextualize what does it mean for us individually and give us a little look into what is it, how do corporations take the data? What do they do with the data? You know, everybody always talks about data. You know, the government's watching, the banks are watching, Facebook's watching, every imprint that we make in data, somebody's watching. And so I thought it might be interesting for all of us, myself included, to sort of listen to him talk about how it's influencing our lives, corporately, government-wise, and different ways, and then what the future of it looks like as well. So those two, Sandeep will be the 26th, I guess, and Stephen will be the 19th. So you won't want to miss those, and I would suggest if you have some friends that are interested in those two subjects, you might want to suggest to them or send them a link so that they can listen to it. So following up on both Stephen and Sandeep, I want to spend a little time today thinking about both of those subjects, ask you to sort of take stock and ask yourself the question, am I using all the data available to me to help me make decisions? You know, historically, we would use financial numbers and things like that to make business decisions. We'd use our compensation, career opportunities. But with the availability of data, are you as an individual maximizing your view of what your full potential is. And I don't just mean where you're working, but in the context of never before have you had the ability to mark to market yourself. Am I being paid accurately for the level that I work at? What are the, in the context of the open marketplace through basically LinkedIn, I guess, and there are all these other different avenues to be able to sort of say, I have a similar job, and at this company, it's worth this, and at this company, it's worth that. Do you have an accurate reflection of your worth at your job? So that'd be the first question that I would ask. And you know, interestingly enough, sometimes people don't want to know the answer to the question because then it spurs them on to have to do something else about it. Because you may find out that you are being undervalued, which then leads you to being underpaid and you're being taken advantage of. But do you have the inertia to actually want to, first of all, go and find that out? And once you find that out, what are you going to do? Are you going to actually look for something else? And I think that many a times people have talked about how this generation will probably have 8, 10, 12 jobs in a lifetime versus perhaps mine, you know, where I had, I think I had two, I guess if you consider this a job, 3 and 4 jobs in a lifetime. How are you going to find those? Like when I think about my kids and the way they access information and data about job and opportunities, it's all online for them. And it's not word of mouth. There is some word of mouth, but it's all online. So are you, you know, the question for me to you is, are you actively and consistently looking for opportunities in the marketplace? And if you're not, why aren't you? And if you are you really ready to move once you find out that there's a much better opportunity for you? Because I think that stigma of people historically looking at someone's CV and saying, oh my God, you know, I can't hire that person because they've actually had 8 or 9 or 10 different jobs. I think more and more organizations are starting to look at that, sort of say to themselves, no, I don't see that as disruptive or a lack of consistency or anything else. I think people are looking at it through a lens of you bring a lot more experience and a lot more perspective than perhaps someone who'd spent their entire life at one particular job. So continuing on that, I guess one of the other questions that sort of pops into my mind, and as you've all known by now, my kids are my greatest source, plus my coaching clients are my greatest source of material because they're actually living, breathing examples of the stuff that I see. It's interesting because, you know, when I talk to them, they don't have that same sort of fear of the corporation. They're far more outspoken than I ever would have been at that time. And actually, I'm quite proud of them in that case for doing so. And maybe it's a function of part of the parental pressure of speaking up and stuff like that. But they don't have that fear. And I've talked about fear on a number of occasions. They don't have that fear. They still have that reluctance sometimes, but they still are prepared to go forward with it. They're still prepared to call something out that they don't think is particularly fair. They're not afraid to challenge the authority of the place that kind of wants them to say, well, it is the way it is and stuff it. And if you don't like it, too bad type of thing. You know, they're willing to say, well, why is that? You know, is there not a better way to do that? So that willingness to speak up, and I guess the real recognition is, I don't know anybody's been fired for speaking up. People may not like it. In fact, when I look back over a lifetime, I realize that many of the people that spoke up were actually the ones that did quite well. Part of the reason was they didn't get the answer they wanted to get, and so they realized it was time to leave. Or by speaking up, they forced the organization to give them the answer that they needed, and they were able to move on. But in either case, they were winners. Let's talk about skills for a second. I mean, when I think of myself, I think that everything I've done in my life has been centered around my core skills, whether it's been trading, whether it's been selling, whether it's been writing my books, whether it's been doing the podcast, whether it's been my coaching. It's all been around human capital, leveraging human capital. And I think I was very lucky in life in that I realized very early on that I had a core set of skills that were the foundation for everything else that I did. However, just like Stephen's talking about what are the skills for the future, I didn't rely on that. I needed to get educated. And so I spent a lot of time. In fact, this morning I had a conversation with one of my clients about how do we get into a state of perpetual education? How do we seek out others that we want to learn from? I mean, obviously the easy way is to read more, watch more, to do all kinds of things. But how do we reach out to people and say, you're doing something I'd like to do. I don't know how you do that. Could you tell me how you do that and how you prepared to be able to do that? And I've seen this now on a number of occasions myself, this continuous education. And it has really two benefits to it. The first benefit is it expands your own thinking and challenges the things that you may have thought or you may not have thought. And that's important. And it's fundamentally changes you on a daily basis to go forward. But the second piece of that is as you bring more information from the outside back to your job, it changes how people see you. It changes how the lens in which people look at you through. And I've seen this on a number of occasions with people that I've coached who I've said to them, you know, I'm going to introduce you to so-and-so so that you can see how somebody else, not in the same industry, but in a different industry, does the same kind of job. And whether it's HR or whether it's trading or whether it's sales or whether it's wealth or whatever it is, that ability to see how others do it differently. And I think the big upside to that is it's that recognition that we could do that, right? There's nothing stopping us from doing that. But there's a tendency amongst people, I won't go so far as call it lazy, but more sort of production plant, you know, as I've said before, four lug nuts into the right front tire is my job. And I have 90 seconds to do it. But, you know, I think you're going to be really surprised with what Stephen has to say. And I think that the demand for upgrading our skills, the demand for recognizing how expandable our skills are into different types of organizations is going to be pretty critical. And, you know, as we move through this technological revolution, the spin-off businesses, all the supporting businesses that are going to get drawn into, you know, when people think about Amazon, they think about Amazon. But when you think about the thousands of other spin-off businesses that are created as a result of Amazon and the thousands of other opportunities that are created of Amazon, that's the key for the future. And in order to do that for yourself successfully, you first have to understand what skills do I bring to the table and look at the landscape and think about what companies are going to need those skills. You know, one of the parts about learning that's interesting, I am a, you know, as my kids or my clients would tell you, I'm a perennial forwarder. I'm constantly forwarding articles, lines, not just ones to make my point, even though that's what some people think. But because I spend my life thinking about my clients as being an extension of them, I think about articles that can help them reinforce what they're thinking or help them see things differently. And there's so much of that stuff going on. People are forwarding shit all the time, and TikTok and Instagram and this and that. And I liked your like, and you liked my like, and you know, multiple times. If people really know you and you really trust them to know you, when they're forwarding you something, they think you're going to find it interesting. So there may be a tendency to go, oh my God, this is like the 80th thing that's been forwarded to me. But just take a moment and take a quick read of it. And if it's not interesting, I mean, even think about sending a note back to the person saying, hey, listen, thanks for your thoughts. It's not the shit I'm interested in, but I appreciate. And then, you know, if you see something on X, Y, or Z, that would be much more helpful to me. And it's interesting because we've become part of a society where you can actually get listened to more when you talk about examples when you talk about it from yourself. And it's not, I don't think that people distrust, but it's a funny thing that there's so much going on and there's so many great examples. And I think part of it is because people are lost. You know, I mean, like this world is just moving so fast and we're being inundated with information and ideas. And I know myself, I just wish I was 25 years old again. I just think there's just so much happening and trying to keep up with it is exhausting. But, you know, you read about another company and this company's doing this, this company's doing that. And you go, oh my God, I hadn't even thought about that. And it's mind boggling that it's all going on around us. So you have to take advantage of the available data of information. You have to take advantage of it for you and you have to take advantage of it for where you work. So as I conclude today's podcast, I'm really excited about having Stephen and I'm really excited about having Sandeep. As you know, I'm really excited about the future. There'll be one day when, unfortunately, I won't be excited about the future, but hopefully that'll be a long, long way away. But I want to try to encourage you all to be excited about the future, to see the future as opportunities and not to fear it. I know there's an inherent natural tendency of people to be afraid of the unknown, to be afraid of the future, but this future is transforming every aspect of our life on a moment-to-moment basis, and aspects that we're not even aware of until we're well into it. I've talked about telehealth. I've talked about everything else. The last thing I'll leave you with today is, if you get a chance to read Jamie Dimon's, the CEO of JP Morgan's bank, letter to the shareholders, he talks about technology and he talks about the world changing and how banks are going to become technology companies, and how the leaders in these organizations are going to be tech people. And when you look at most of the changes that have been created in the world, they've been led by tech people. And it's a fascinating insight into a man who runs the largest bank in the world, and that some would say is the most traditional, and his view of the future. Just like I told you to read Fareed Zakaria's book, 10 Post-Pandemic Lessons, I think you'll get a lot from this, and hopefully it will do what it does for me, which is spurs me on to learn, read, and watch as much as I possibly can. The podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.